Hello, and you're very welcome to another episode of Heritage at the Heart podcast. I'm Cara Ward, Heritage Officer, and I'm here with
Councillor Brian McKenna,
Udell Trainer,
Vincent McQuaid,
Michael Trainer.
So, can you tell me a bit about the history of this place, or what makes it so important or unique?
Well, I suppose going back 40, 60 or 70 years, I came here in 1972 to work. Following, I'd done my leaving in 72, and I was looking for a job, and there weren't many jobs around at that time, but I got a bit of much work in Sherry's factory, and then they were closing for holidays, so there was a job advertised in Mullen Mill, and I put in an application for it, came down, done the interview and got it, and came here at that time, 72, and I stayed here about 1992. So I was here about 20 years, and when I came here first, there was a lot of old people in the factory. It was the old traditional way of making farm boots and shoes and all that kind of stuff. But there was a lot of old people. That's what struck me when I walked in through the door into the factory on the first morning. It seemed to be all old people. Now I was probably 18 at the time, just starting out. And I stayed here, as I said, for 20 years. And I really enjoyed my time here. I was talking to other people who worked in the factory, and some of them said it was a nightmare for them. But I have to say I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed the people here. There were great people that worked in the factory. They were from Glasslough, Kerry Crow, all around North Monaghan here.
And what kind of work were you doing, Brian?
Well, I started off putting in what they called the stiffener in the back of the shoe. That was my job, and tacking on the insoles.
Were they hobnail boots, or what kind of boots were they?
Yeah, some of them were hobnail boots and some of them were farm boots, farmers working on farms and that kind of stuff.
And would they have been sold all over?
Oh, all over Ireland, absolutely. James Boylan, the old James Boylan, he lived in Dublin, but then he had his son James, and he used to come down here probably every month or so. But old James Boylan would come about once every 2 months. I never actually met the man, but he used to come down here about once every 2 months and walk around the factory and be speaking to all the old folks in the
factory. And the people who were here longer, had they worked in the mill, any of them, back in the day?
They would have worked in it as a shoe factory.
In the shoe factory?
It was a mill going back.
That was way back?
Years ago.
Yeah.
But then Boylan's, I think, bought it sometime in the 40s.
Right.
And developed it into, turned it into a shoe factory. Mm-hmm. And Vincent McQuaid has photographs of, I think it's Sean Lamass, at the official opening of it here. It was actually, I think they were standing around where we are standing here at the minute. Vincent has photographs about all that.
My father's people were all born and reared here. My grandfather, Vincy McQuaid, the McQuaids would have moved from Athmacly over here, I think, in the late 1920s, very early 1930s. So, Brian has mentioned there, but Minister Lamass been here. That I think was at the opening, was of the new making room, which is over behind us there. Mm-hmm. I think it was 1954. So that was a big ceremony. Mm-hmm. The bishop came down, mass was said,
and when was that?
It was 1954. I think there's a little bit of confusion as to when the exact date it was, but I think when you look back through history and when Sean Lamass was in charge of the Department of Industry and Commerce was in around that time. But I'd say we'd have a very close affinity with Mullen. Mm-hmm. And all my father's siblings worked here, there were six of them, mm-hmm. and they all worked here but two. Mm-hmm. So dad had two sisters that didn't work here. But the rest
free
of them all worked
for
here.
Everybody.
Well, I don't know if it would have been free
shoes. Were there
shoes,
any perks?
I'm sure there was perks, all right, but I don't know if
it
went as far as
it was a hard place
per.
To work, too.
My father, like Brian, would have very fond memories, and my Uncle Pat, both deceased now, and my other Uncle Seamus, they would have said, you're expected to do a hard day's work, and, conditions mightn't have, back in them early days, mightn't have been the best.
Yeah.
Talked about
cold employment. But, I mean, how many people would have been working here? Do you think
Dad said in his time he worked in the clicking room, and I think it would be certainly been over 100 Brian at all times, wouldn't it?
From all over North Monaghan, really, and South.
Last Lyme Vale, as Brian said, and Monaghan Town
a bit. A lot of handwork that time, machines, a lot of handwork had to be done, so
men and women,
more people.
Both men and women worked here? Or?
Yes, there'd be a lot of ladies doing the sewing of the uppers, the clothes room, and that there is behind us.
Okay, so we're standing in a courtyard building. We've got a tall two-story stone building to our right here, and then behind us another building which has been, was part of the shoe factory and has been restored, and to the left as well. And Adele, can you tell us a bit about the history of the village or how it developed? Or
well, I suppose Michael's probably best charged with that story. He's been around here longer than I have.
Can you tell us?
I'm here nearly from the start. It started about 1860, so with the original factory was built, and it seemed to be built then as a woolen mill. And this newspaper was given to me where the factory must have closed up in the late 1880s then, because there's an auction of all the bits and pieces advertised and all the detail of that. And I have a copy of that somewhere. That it seemed then to be laying idle till about 1920, maybe 22, after the new government was formed and grants came, and there was a boot factory started here at that stage.
All right, okay.
It hit a bad patch about the time of the war, and it changed hands then, and the Boylan family bought the thing, and it stayed then a shoe factory. Up till sometime after Brian left, it closed then, of course. And
went downhill.
It was put up for sale, and we bought it, and it's now a lighting factory in the factory.
Oh. And did your family work here as well?
Or none of my family worked here, no, but the first one that worked here.
And what makes this place unique?
I suppose the history and the characters, and there's always stories about it. And Vinci references Sean Lamas opening the place. And there's a photograph of Sean Lamas on that Great and the Good standing behind a desk. The desk is still in there that appears in the photograph in that thing. And if you're talking to Father McCartan McQuaid, the bishop done the official opening. And a video of that exists that Father Kirk would have done on the Sydney camera. That still exists. Oh. Father McQuaid tells me him and Joe Corrigan served Mass on that occasion. So there's a multitude of stories there. One of the stories, which is, I think, truth in it, is that the Tidy Towns competition for Ireland was born out of a thought process in the village here, where old James Boylan always gave a prize for the tidiest town and the best kept garden in the village and the best kept house in the village and that. And I have two of the trophies that was awarded to Mrs. Mulligan. Came to me there after Seamus died in two successive years, where she won the trophy in that competition. Someday we'll have a wee heritage place here in the village where all that sort of history will be displayed, but we're not just at that point yet. So the history of the village, I suppose, makes it special in all the stories.
And the buildings survive, so many of them survive?
I think the only house that was demolished and completely replaced is the one where Declan Ford lives, which was the manager's house for the factory.
Right, okay.
It was demolished and replaced with a bungalow sometime in the 70s, probably.
Yeah.
Other than that, the buildings are still in existence. We sort of done them up. And
so what we have really is a mill village in the Ulster tradition, like Sion Mills and maybe Caledon or Bessbrook and some of the other Ulster mill villages. And so what you would have is the mill buildings, and then the warehouses, and then all the workers' houses as well. So isn't that... houses for all the workers?
That's exactly what it was. And the workers' houses was built. There's a white row up there and a red row on the other side of the road. The white row would be the elderly row, older row. It was built first. And it seems it was a tradition built in mill villages at the time to make them that wee bit grander, that the front door accommodated two houses. So when you went through the front door, the house looked grander, but it actually was two houses.
Yeah.
And it was one up and one down, one to the left and one to the right. There was a family in each. But the shared door made them look a grander development. So the landlord or whoever built them would do this. And that was a tradition throughout Ireland and England to do that. And that's the way they were here for a long number of years. And there's evidence of that still here.
Another house is still lived in today?
The houses are still lived in, but they have been created into bigger houses now. It's not just one up and one down. But one of the doors still exists from the original. The door was actually split in two as well. So one of them had survived all the years, mended and repaired, but still survived, and it's here too.
Dale, can you tell me a bit about the buildings now as they are?
So we have established a lighting business here where we make decorative lighting for bars, hotels and restaurants. So it's all fabricated here in Mullin, and we have about 100 people back working in the factory. And what's been really, really nice is that true to the old kind of workers' village style, a lot of our team actually are back living in the village, with about 20 people living in the village and working in the factory. That's so brilliant. It brings back a really lovely sense
it's
of community.
Really revived, the village, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. It's, you know, there's so much life in the village, you know, again, not just because of the employment here, but just having new houses coming available and new families moving in and lots of young kids running around. So it's great. It's great to see life back in the village.
And which buildings do you use at all? So
around us here, we're in a courtyard. It's in a U shape. So we use absolutely every single part of the old building. Over here to our right, there's a one-story studio, which we use for our ceramics department. So we have our team in there making ceramics for the lights. Behind you there we have a two-story building, and those are both offices where our market and sales and design teams
are. You can see the lovely slate roof still on it.
Yeah, the original slate.
It's been rendered sort of pebble dash kind of effect, but it's obviously been well restored.
Yeah, so we've done our best to keep the character of the buildings, you know, and when you pull up into the courtyard, you know, all you see is the old heritage, and we've obviously done some modern extensions out the back, but it's quite well concealed that you can't see it. And so then in here we have an arched entryway, which brings us into the main kind of factory area within that we use the woman for working. Over here to the left we have the barrel-shaped building with the bell tower. So it was, I believe, Brian, a sewing room back in the day, wasn't it? Upstairs was the sewing room.
Yeah.
But
they cut the leather downstairs, just in that lower section. The leather went up, all the parts went upstairs, and the women upstairs sewed the parts of the shoe together.
Yeah.
And then it passed down into the lasting room where the men were, and they made it onto last and made the shoe for the...
Do you see that door at the second level? And you've got that lintel, so that's obviously an original. So that would have been probably to get materials up and down easily. Would there have been some sort of a hoist or something?
There wasn't, no. When I came here, there wasn't a hoist.
Everything
was carried out through that door there and up the stairs. It was a very laborious type of work. But then inside in the cutting room, they made a type of a little shaft lift. Uh-huh. And you pulled it with two ropes.
Right.
So the material, the stuff was put in on this little shelf and just pulled up. So that was in the 70s and 80s when I came here. That was installed. But now it was a very slow way of doing it. In the old days, carrying it out through that door and up the steps.
Yeah.
All changed the weather.
Oh, the steps are over there to the left. Yeah. So they're going up to that second level. So that kind of helps a wee bit with the access. But it's been beautifully restored. And that building particularly, I love... the modern intervention, that roof, that barreled roof, it sits quite nicely though with the historic fabric. So that's beautiful. And maybe we'll get a walk down to the workers' cottages now.
Yes.
And take a look at that. I'm up the road here and we can see the red brick workers' cottages on the left. We're passing that barreled roof structure. And can you tell me where was the mill race and the mill building itself, Brian?
Behind that tree there, in behind those trees.
Yes. So the wheel would have been behind here.
Yeah, the water came down and it fed down in through the walls. You can't see it, but it's behind that building there.
Yeah.
And we're down under the factory.
So sort of near where that bell tower is, just below that would have been where the water fed in.
Down fairly deep now, because the water down there drove the turbines, and that generated electricity way back and got out in what days in the early century. But the water, that was a man-made thing, and the water was taken from Emmy here the whole way down, whatever distance that is, 3 or 4 miles, I'd say.
So it's a really long
mill
race.
It was a man-made structure.
Mm-hmm. So it probably would have been quite powerful.
Well, I'd imagine it would when it would be in full flow.
Yeah. So what about these cottages here, Mikey?
the White Row and the Red Row,
uh-huh.
and then a few other buildings. The big stone one
uh-huh.
was known as the Lodging House. It was yes. also McQuaid's house, Swiss man's ancestors.
Yes. And
his ancestors was there. That was McQuaid's house.
That summer seat over there was made by my great-grandfather and grandfather, two of them together. That was made in 1933, I think my Aunt Ailish said.
That's lovely, and it's sort of like a curving stone bench.
Yeah,
was that carved out of...
Yeah, they made a thing for it, the two of them.
I'm just going to get a closer
look at it.
It's
inscribed there. It's inscribed.
Is it... It is actually stone, isn't it?
It's concrete, yeah.
Well, it's concrete, I was thinking.
So
that
was,
it looks too hard.
Michael Joe McQuaid was my great-grandfather. He was Vincy McQuaid's father, my grandfather. And the two of them made that. 1944.
Directed by Vincy McQuaid in loving memory of the McQuaids of Mullen.
Right. Yeah, right.
We'll walk on up here. And what about this building here on the left? What's that? This one here. Do you know what that one is?
Corley's would have lived in that house.
Yes.
Isn't that right, Brian?
It looks like it would have been a...
Jared Corley lived there, yeah.
It would have been a grand enough building, would it?
That's a lovely place there.
I wasn't in it. Vicky, were you in it? I was in it. And he's a thing, it's lovely front on it and that.
Yes.
It was the way the village was laid out. There's a shop beneath that and living quarters there.
Uh-huh. That's right.
And if you just look around the corner now, you'll see old McKenna's name still over the shop door.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. My grandfather made that sign as well.
Oh, isn't that fun?
Back in the 40s, old McKenna. And
so
it's
that
still
was the wee shop, was it?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, groceries and
so we're coming
like
into
that.
the centre of the workers part of the village. We'll walk down these steps towards the shop. On our right, you can see a row of terraced, whitewashed workers' houses, and they're beautifully painted with blue and black and green doors and chimney pots, and it just looks really well kept. So, what is the story with there was one side white and one side red brick?
It's just the materials are built with. This is built with red brick. The ones on the white row is built with stone and then lime plastered.
So it's known as white row?
The white row just because of the colour and no other reason.
Mm. And would there have been any difference in the people who lived on either side? Was there families on this side? Or?
Oh, there's families on both sides. There's families in all of them.
Yeah.
And quite big families reared in small wee houses here. But they were all there.
Yeah.
It was all outside loos, etc. There was no running water in those houses.
Well, that was a thriving spot, you see, in the early 60s. Because lots of married people lived in those houses, in them all. But the county council came along in the early 60s and built houses in Oriel Park and Emmyvale.
Mm-hmm.
And all the people that lived here all got houses in Emmyvale, so they all moved out of the village.
Uh-huh.
And the village deteriorated after that until Michael here come along and restored it back to what you see there today. It's much better than it was in the 60s, like, but...
Uh-huh.
Those houses were all occupied in the early 60s, but you know, they weren't brilliant houses, but when the council built new houses in Emmyvale, people took the opportunity. The whole place just the deserted village.
Mm.
When I was coming to work here in the 80s, there was nobody hardly living in there.
Yeah.
Seamus Mulligan at the top end and Jeannie Kiar and his sister Alice lived there in that house there. There was only about two of them occupied in the 80s, so they were laying there for 20 or 30 years.
So this is the back of the Red Row. Would this have been the entrance to these properties? You've got the doors here, so is that the front door?
Those doors
back onto
the road, so that's the only door.
They back onto the road, and the other, the white houses sort of face onto the road. These are beautiful. And so, Michael, have you restored these?
They're restored. They're all inhabited now. All these houses are inhabited.
And was it yourself?
Families again in the village.
And how did you go about the restoration? It's a fantastic job.
Oh, I suppose like eating an elephant one bit at a time.
Did you get any support or funding through any of the historic?
We got plenty of support,
buttons.
Very little funding.
Oh, is that right? Oh, that's a shame.
No,
well,
the funding wasn't available for that project now.
Not at that time.
No.
And when was that you were doing it?
Well, it's probably still a work in progress, but over the last 20 years.
So what did it involve? I mean, you had to sort of probably put in toilets and stuff. They wouldn't have had toilets.
Yeah, look, but you were left with the outside walls, really. Mm-hmm. Everything else is new.
Yeah. But you've got the lovely sash windows and the wall ties there holding it together. Yeah. I suppose maybe a bit of support in that.
The sash windows would be new, but they'd be replicating exactly what was there.
Aye, they look new, but they look in keeping.
Like all of that was with because the ground says it was deserted and derelict for 30 odd years. It was derelict. Like there was very little left that could be saved except the structure, and the structure is as was.
But it's something because these are such beautiful buildings, and the workmanship that went into them back in the day for workers' cottages. Look at the lovely sandstone cornerstones, the coin stones, and the doors. Are they original or are they replicated?
Because they're
quite a unique sort of split door, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
So they open out.
I referenced that earlier.
Yeah.
The split door was in the village previously. So we limited again with a new door.
Yeah, shall we walk on up here and take a look at the rest of them? Behind us there's a few more houses and the shop, Oh McKenna's.
Yeah, and
that was a grocery. There was all general groceries and that can be bought there. Mm-hmm. My two aunts that are surviving now, they were said it was a fantastic little shop. Back in the day, you could get your bacon, sausages, milk, all the necessaries were got there.
Oh,
and it was a fantastic part of the community. It was the centre here at the time. And then we had Hall's shop up here. That was later on then. I suppose when Mrs. Hawley came here, early 60s, was it?
But I'm not sure when they came here, Vincent. Tell you the truth, they were here when I came in the 70s, so probably around that time, sometime in the late 60s.
Yes.
So if there was maybe 100 people working in the factory at a time, how many people do you think were living in the village? I mean, I suppose with the families and the children, and it would have been quite a decent population here in Mullen Village back in the day.
Oh yeah, and this in the late 50s, early 60s, and when it was flying, like, and the factory was going well, there was lots of people, all the houses were occupied. Mm-hmm. But as I said, the change come when the council built houses in Emmyville. But up to that, it was a thriving village, and as Michael has said earlier, there used to be competition for the gardens that you see in the day mowing the grass there.
Uh-huh.
They used to plant them with flowers, and there'd be competitions, and there'd be prizes presented to the best looking garden and all that. Like, it was fantastic.
And did you have a school?
I have a cutting from a Northern Standard, a copy of the results of the prize given of that. I think it was back in 56 or 57, somewhere in around that period of time.
Just sweeping back into the main road of the village and coming towards the end of the village, what are these buildings, these stone buildings at the end here, Brian?
Well, the one at the end, the very end one, that is a dance hall.
Right.
Now, the steps that were led up to it, then you can see the two
outside,
pillars on there.
Yeah.
But there used to be stairs there. We actually took them down to the factory. They're in the leading up to the clicker or the cutting room upstairs.
Uh-huh.
But that used to be a dance hall, and upstairs there used to be dances in it.
Mm.
I wasn't about that
when
time,
was
I
that
have
now?
To say. But I'm told that Val Doonigan played in there, and what do you call the guy from Scotland? He used to do musicals.
Clary Hayden Show Band.
Clary Hayden, there was a number of shows here with Clary Hayden.
Yeah.
Again, I wasn't at any of them, but I was told. People in the factory told me that years ago. Whenever I was there, they'd be talking at lunchtime and breaks and things like that, and they'd be telling you the history of the place.
Uh-huh.
It was fantastic, the dances and everything up there. People used to come from all around to go to them. Like, the place would be jammed up there.
I remember my father saying Val Doonigan used to stay in a little caravan here when he'd be here.
Yeah, probably.
You know, so and then if you think of the fame he had, you know, through his career.
He was a big star.
And played music here.
Fantastic. And so what we have is like a pair of buildings. They're almost identical, and they're like hip roof structures, structures. They're actually really
An uncle of my father's lived there, Jim McQuaid.
Mm-hmm.
Jim worked in the factory as well, so they were there for a good few years.
And so what were they built as? Were they more workers' houses? I mean, obviously we had the dance hall there, but they look more substantial than the workers' houses. They maybe were built for some other function originally.
No, this house here, beside the village hall. That there was known as the felt, because there was a felt roof on it at the time, and that was split into four houses. So again, a grand building, but actually four families lived in it. And this door here was shared for two. There's a door at the opposite side was also shared for two.
Yeah, so it's four houses.
And the evidence of that is still in there. If you went in, you can see the remains of the staircases, where there was four staircases up.
And they're currently vacant, but you have plans for them?
Plans for the two of them. Ideas to bring them together in an overall building, which will be a sort of a focal point for the village.
Fantastic. That's brilliant.
One wee bit I'd tell you before I go was about the factory. Obviously was a big economic drive, not just in the village, but in the whole local community. Mm-hmm. The then parish priest, Father Crudden, was quoted one time as saying that if it wasn't for the factory in Mullen, the priests of the parish would have starved.
So it was a real loss, but it's absolutely brilliant to see it being revived and brought back to life. It's a real credit to you and to Edel as well in bringing her business here and reviving the place as well. So thank you, Councillor Brian McKenna, Vincent McQuaid, Edel Traynor and Michael Traynor, for joining us today and showing us around this beautiful village. Thank you. See you next time.